Good morning, Tino.
Good morning, Joel. How are we, my good sir?
I'm very well. Are you ready for homework?
So
the homework last week was we had somebody up in the north who was trying to grow celeriac, yep. And it was just not coming good.
Yep.
So did you figure out an answer for that?
Well, it wasn't too long after the show that I figured out an answer. Actually, I took a call in after the show, and there was a lovely lady that grows celeriac commercially, and she gave me some great tips. So, sow in spring, grow over the summer, it grows in nice warm summers, and just give it plenty of water. So it might be that there's just not enough available water for the plant, and it you know, that way you'll be able to bulk it out, I suppose. I think the person, they just stopped growing. So it might be that it's cold or it just hasn't had enough water. So
more water and maybe more time.
Yeah, maybe just a bit more time and see if the weather warms up a little bit. So, because there are a lot of plants that have just slowed to a snail's pace pretty much, and the snails are catching up with them. But, you know, it's the ground temperature has been up and down. So certainly a lot of my pumpkins and corn have come up and they've germinated well, but they've got to a point where they've just stopped growing. Now I'm hoping that, you know, with a little bit warmer temperatures, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to get those today because as we speak, looking out the window in Hobart, it is raining right now. Not heavily, a heavy mist. And finally, I'm going to ask this one.
There's
for
a
me.
Lot of homework. Wow. Yeah. I feel very underprepared.
I'm going to ask this one for me. I got given this beautiful orchid, and it's apparently like a family heirloom from grandmother to mother to us for some reason, and from another family. And, you know, I'm looking at it going, I'm not a very good gardener, and that's a very important plant to someone, and if it's dead in
a year... Believe in yourself, Joel. Believe in yourself.
I've done my best with it. It produced beautiful flowers. So there's the actual picture of it. Yeah. Now, a couple of questions. One is a couple of the big, long fronds are going kind of browny black along their length.
Yep.
So what's happening with them?
That just looks like an ink what they call an ink spot or a leaf spot. That I wouldn't worry too much about that. That'll kind of rectify itself. And there's a bit of tip burn on there, but that could just be from a bit same thing. Or
All it's done is sat there and being watered, and it's gotten plenty of rain and water where it's been.
Yeah,
and you can see that there's a whole bunch of kind of bulbs out of the ground, and a few of them alive, a few of them are the dead. Should I get rid of the dead ones?
No, look, I wouldn't bother. There's some blind ones there that they're fine. I would pot it up. That's the pot that you're putting it in, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's a slightly bigger pot because the lady who gave it to me said it needs repotting.
Yeah, look, it does look a little bit cramped in its existing pot. The good thing about orchids is you've done well with the slightly larger pot. They just like to be potted up. You know, they don't like to be swimming in anything too big. So
they'd like to still be snug. It'll still be snug.
And you just put in some orchid food or something.
I've got orchid mix. Bought a bag of orchid mix. It's $4 there. That hopefully solves the problem. All right. She'll repot it.
And that flower spike that's on it that looks quite lovely, actually. If it's died off,
it's dying now, yeah.
I'd probably snip it. I'd probably take that off before you repot or after.
Snip it and then concentrate on giving it love so next year it produces more flowers and then it's used to being at our house. All right. Tino Cannavale, what should we be doing in the garden this weekend?
Well, there's a lot. You can still be planting a lot of those plants, zucchinis. And actually, if you have planted zucchinis earlier, I'm getting my first crop now, but pick off and pick regularly. And that way you'll never get that glut. Plant your beans. You can go for your corn. All of those summer crops. And I think we might get a milder season this year, so we might not be expecting really large amounts or really massive crops off these things. Tomatoes, you know, those kind of fruiting plants, even capsicum. We might get a later season for those. So don't be too disappointed if you don't have them. As early as you normally would, we will get them. If you've got fruiting trees, things like cherries that are coming into fruit or, you know, about to be picked, with this rain, if you're getting it, it's a good idea to, once the rain goes through, is to actually go outside and give your tree a bit of a shake, and that'll take that physical water away from the actual fruit itself. Now,
What, do cherry farmers do that? Do you go and shake your trees?
They use air blowers that'll blow all the leaves, and that can dry them. But the problem with shaking it, obviously, too rigorous a shaking, if it's the fruit is too ripe, it'll drop, you know. So just a light shake will actually get that water physically off there and can help prevent a lot of fungal problems if it stays wet for too long.
Yeah.
If you're in a shadier position, in one of those sort of stone fruit trees that like that full sun position. Doing that can actually help prevent a lot of the pests as well. You know, there's a lot of cutting back of flowering plants to do as they sort of come through. I drive past an old lady's garden on a corner in Sorrel that's one of my favourite gardens in Hobart, but because she just tends it so lovingly. But, you know, she's got a lot of flowers in there, and I was just noticing, you know, she seems to be deadheading them, and it just keeps the plants looking fresh and keeps those blooms coming. So, and giving things a feed as well can be a really good thing to do at this time of the year, and enjoying being out there and loving this rain as well.
Margaret in Gravelly Beach, what can we do for you?
Good morning, gentlemen. It's what you can't do for me now. To Tina, I've solved the problem.
Oh.
I rang a few weeks ago talking about my tomato plants. Silver on some of the leaves.
Yes.
And you've sort of said, well, either put fish emulsion in and water in well, or rip them out and start again. I thought, oh, I'm not going to rip them out. I've got to keep going. And they're thriving beautifully now, thanks to you.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, thank you. Have you had a sort of burst of slightly warmer weather? Has it slightly increased since?
No.
No. Okay, well, cool. Excellent.
Yeah, they've got little flowers on them now. They're thriving. They're growing. And, yeah, it did the trick. Thank you so much.
Well, the question, Margaret, is was the radio on when you got that advice? And therefore, did they hear Tino give them the kiss of death?
Yes, the radio was on, and they thought, uh-oh, we're going to grow.
Yeah, that fish emulsion didn't do anything. It was like, I'm going to tell you to rip out them tomato plants.
Yeah, no.
But they've started to put on good growth now, and if they are the indeterminate types, they're climbing types, then start to train them up now.
Yes, you know, I am.
Oh, brilliant. Yep.
They really are growing so well. I can't believe it.
Oh,
yes.
Fantastic. And
lovely.
If they do slow down again, I mean, it's a fine line between too much of that fish emulsion and, you know, getting a lot of leaf. But if they do slow down again, just a little half hit of it, we'll do the trick as well. So.
Oh, I haven't had to put any more on. They're just
brilliant.
Going, they're blowing away. That's great.
Excellent. Margaret, okay. Thank you so much. Lovely to hear
Merry
from you.
Christmas to you both.
You
thank
too.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Leslie's in...
The best Christmas baubles are tomatoes.
Oh, very true. Leslie's in Leith. Hello, Leslie.
Good morning.
Morning.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Oh, fantastic. It's a lovely morning.
Yes. A bit cloudy here, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same here, drizzly. But
it's cloudy and drizzly, but Tino thinks it's lovely. He is a plant, after all.
How can we help?
The wind destroyed my broad beans, which I have picked and put in the freezer.
Yeah.
But they had lots of brown spots on them.
Yes.
And so did my garlic.
Is it sort of an orangey brown spot?
Yeah, like
rust.
You like mosquito bites?
Yeah, look, I'd say rust. And certainly broad beans and garlic are susceptible to that. It won't be a problem, I suppose, with your beans. Are you sort of picking them, storing them, and like freezing them, or
I had to because the wind just even though I had a 3 foot high mesh fence, to contain them. It just knocked it over because we're a little bit exposed here. So.
And they are a soft. I mean, that's part of the appeal for me is that lovely soft foliage that they get. So, and that can be easily damaged. So, look, not so much of a problem with your beans. Although I probably wouldn't. Well, if you've frozen them, or I wouldn't be collecting any seed from them for next year if that's what you were doing. But with your garlic, the rust can, you can still eat it, obviously, but just the storability of it, you'll find that you might lose a bit. So one way of doing it might be just to completely peel the whole clove and get each individual bulb out and then freeze them or use them straight away, depending on how much you've got. So, yeah, just that they're the only real problems with the rust. And again, just don't use that garlic for seed next year, or you'll continue the problem on, or you'll be likely to continue the problem on, I should say. So,
okay. What about the soil?
Well, look,
I've got IBC containers that are wicking beds, like Sophie made years ago. So,
If you're going to plant another crop, I'd rotate it to something probably like, you could put carrots or parsnip in now, that they'd be fine and less susceptible to that particular problem. But what I tend to do is, if possible or applicable, I like to clear the bed out and get the sun onto the actual soil itself, and for a couple of good sort of sunny days, get the UV there, and then turn that back through, and then leave it fallow for just a couple of weeks, and then just rotate your crop. So just, as I said, try a bit of carrot or parsnip in there and get a crop of those out of it. Although wicking beds, depending on how deep your soil profile is, you know, you might not want to go for a really big parsnip or a really big carrot. So go for one of the shorter varieties.
About 300.
Yeah. About 300 deep. Yeah, you could probably grow one of the bigger varieties, but they might get too big. So I'd be going for something like in the carrots, say a Manchester table or an early nuts or something like that. So, one that only gets to about 15 to 20 centimetres.
Yeah, you don't want a carrot doing a right-hand turn when it gets to the bottom, do you?
Yeah.
90-degree turn.
I mean, lettuce or leafy greens would probably be okay. Again, just steer clear of something like silver beet or beetroot, because they're also susceptible. But, yeah, it is a fairly common problem, and sometimes, when you get a lot of moisture around your foliage that stays there, you'll tend to get those problems. So, sorry about that.
That's okay. I just remembered another question was, I've got cabbage in, and they're getting sort of successive pickings.
Yep, yep.
But down in the bottom where the leaves come out of the stalk, there's a lot of little grey bugs.
Aphids, yeah, grey aphids will attack your cabbage. Are they like a drum-headed cabbage? Are they one of those tight-headed cabbages that you...
Yeah, well, it's a sugar loaf.
Yeah, look, that you can use sort of a pyrethrum spray or even a white oil to soak them or control them with, or neem oil or horticultural oil. But I tend to just pick off those really badly affected leaves, depending on the maturity of the cabbage, but I suspect they're coming along quite well. Are they near maturity now?
Like... I've picked one, one, and in the middle of the drum was a brown band where the leaf was going mouldy and rotting.
You might have, there's also what's called cabbage moth. Now, it's not cabbage white butterfly. It's a small diamondback moth is, I think, the other name for it. And that tends to, its larvae will pierce all the way through into the heart of the cabbage. So that may be the problem. It might be that it's just a leaf on the inside that... it sounds like diamondback moth, sorry. But, you can still eat, cut those bits out and eat around it, but yeah, again, it won't last for terribly long. So, yeah, you can control those things, but by this end of the season, unless you're planting more cabbages, I wouldn't really bother.
No.
Not a lot of good news for you,
but you still got. You're still going to have broad beans, garlic, and cabbages, so you're still doing well.
Good, best of luck with that, Leslie. Daryl is in Penguin. Hello, Daryl.
Good morning.
Morning, Daryl.
Pumpkins are slow this year because of the cold and rough weather. They're a bit yellow. The leaves are a bit yellow. They're not very advanced yet, but what can I shake them up with?
Well, ideally a bit of heat, nice warm day, but, the problem is the ground's cold, so, and that makes it hard for the plant to access the nutrients in it. So you can sort of put more nutrient down, that is a thing, and pumpkins tend to like a bit of nutrient anyway, so you can push them along a bit that way, but unless we get a bit of heat, it can be, hard for that plant to take it up anyway. And then if you overdoing it, can burn the tips of your plant. So, patience, really. I'm sorry. You know, I've used things like warmer water even to warm the ground up around the root zone of the plant. And it has worked in the past. So you could try something like that. It doesn't have to be too hot. No boiling water, but, you know, certainly lukewarm water is usually enough to bring it up. But
yeah. What about a fertilizer boost?
Well, yeah, that's the problem with the cold is the inability or the plant's finding it hard to take that up anyway. So if it's a slow release or it's a blood and bone or something, then it can sit there until the weather warms up. But if it's a liquid feed, I'd probably wait till a warmish day, till the ground got nice and warm, and then I'd water around. If you've mulched, then one way of actually warming the ground up is to pull the mulch away and let the sun, whatever sun there is, get onto that ground and bake during the day, and then cover it over at night, and that can also heat up around. And also using, you know, an old window. I've used things where I've got an old window and put four bales of straw around the plant, and then put a window on top of it, and that just creates a little hothouse for this earlier part of the season to get them really pushed along and get them nice and mature or growing until the weather warms up a little bit. So
thank you.
No, my pleasure, mate.
Thank you very much for that. Where do you get an old window from? Did you just knock a house down somewhere?
Yes. My neighbour's finding it very drafty at the moment. No, tip shops are great. Usually it can be an old bit of glass. It can be a bit of plastic even, but it doesn't insulate as well. But, yeah, anywhere that there is a window, yeah, you can use it.
Let's see what we can do for Frank in Devonport about his poor passion fruit. Hello, Frank.
Good morning, gentlemen.
G'day, Frank. How are we going?
You know, I've got three passion fruit vines that are growing like crazy. They've got flowers everywhere.
Yep.
But I'm not getting any fruit.
Right. If you're getting the flowers, then the fruit set will follow if there's pollination. So are you getting a lot of activity around them, insect-wise?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah. Is it still quite cold? You're getting quite cold sort of overnight temperatures where you are still.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, look, it will happen. You just needs to be a little bit warmer. Those bees are probably just staying inside for a little while for the moment. So, fruit set will happen on them. Just be patient with it. You will be fine.
Thank you. I do have another little question.
Yeah,
if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Now, Peter Cundall had a great aversion to lawns. He hated lawns. So, I've got this like a flat, I don't know, it looks like a miniature clover, and it's got tiny little yellow flowers on it.
Right.
In the lawn.
Little subterranean clover. It's a trifoil, three-leaf plant, like clover.
It looks a bit like that, and it's the tiniest little yellow flower.
Yeah, look, it's probably one of the clovers. You've got the white, the black. I think there's a yellow. There's a few varieties of it. Clovers are a perennial problem in lawns in certain areas. You can use, I think, an iron sulfate addition will help with clover. I don't think they like the addition of iron. So that could be one solution. There is a product, a lawn product that contains that, and it's a clover control agent. So that can work. Grubbing it out, though, you can grub it out, but if it's like the subterranean type, you've kind of got to get all those underground stems, and otherwise they will come back. And if it has taken over a large area, the best thing with your lawn is if you do control that particular problem, you'll get a patch, obviously. So as soon as that starts to die off or it has died off, then sowing a little bit of seed around the place can actually help, you know, fill that space in quicker, because the best way of controlling any of those weeds in a garden situation, but especially in a lawn, is to outcompete it, because grass can grow very vigorously and strongly and can actually outcompete a lot of those weeds. So it just needs to be given a chance. So, yeah, hopefully that works. Bit of iron or bit of manual removing with a fork, an actual kitchen fork, can be a very good tool for that as well. So, yeah.
Okay, Thank you very much, and I hope Santa Claus is very kind to you.
Oh, thanks, mate. Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much, Frank.
And Happy New Year.
Thank you. Ian's in King. Well, before we go to Ian, I have found a notice from the New Bina Church of Christ for Carols by Candlelight Port Arthur. Featuring the Steve Atkins, the Tasman District School, the Peninsula Singers, the Nativity Drama. It's a free admission and it's happening 8 p.m. on Sunday.
That's it.
So 8 o'clock tomorrow night, New Bina Church of Christ is the sponsor. So I'm presuming that that's actually where it is going to be going on. If you have more detail than that, I would love to know about it. Send me a text 0438 922 936. Now we're going to Ian in Kingston. Hello, Ian. What's happening to your green gauge?
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I've got a green gauge tree that hasn't produced any fruit for the last two seasons.
Has it produced?
I get plenty of blossom.
Yep.
I know that green gauge trees can miss a season now and then, but two in a row, I thought that's a bit much.
What pollinator do you have for them? They will need a pollinator. Generally, it's always been considered a Coos Golden Drop, but a lot of people in different areas are finding a golden gauge to be the correct timing for the pollination.
Well, I haven't got anything. The previous seasons to the last two, the tree was completely laden with fruit. We had heaps of it. So I might have a neighbour that's got a...
And it might be that tree's either sick and not blossoming or it's skipped a year and it's just coincided that you know, it hasn't pollinated yours or they've removed it. So you could have a bit of a wander around, or if you know your neighbours, have a bit of a wee ask around and see if you can sort of find and locate the tree. It's got to be within... 3 to 5K, I think, is bee distance. So you might actually, that's a big long walk. You might just be better off buying a new tree, like a pollinating tree, if you've got the space for it. That is,
yes, so, I have. So what do you recommend?
It's either a Coos Golden Drop or a Golden Gauge.
All right.
They tend to be the two good pollinators for the green gauge, and you know, the green gauge is well worth it. You know. For it alone, but to have the golden ones, they're also very nice as well. So,
yeah. So okay then.
No, pleasure. Excellent.
Thank you very much for that. Now, I've got another question about green gauges from Jay on the text saying, can I prune my green gauges new growth? It's too high to net.
Oh, yeah, you can take some of those soft tips now. Yeah, not a problem. They'll be fine. You know, if it's a case of netting them and losing the fruit, then, yeah, you can go through and take new shoots. Certainly, on fruit trees, we tend to take the inward-growing ones now anyway. So it just means you probably won't need to go through as drastically in summer if you do a summer prune, which is a good idea if you want fruit. So,
is your screen on?
Oh, no.
You're allowed to turn it on, your screen on now, yeah. Now, Tino, for this next question. I love this. I think this is a great combo. Mal in Mull Creek has sent us a picture, and then he's going to talk us through it on the phone. Hello, Mal. How are you?
Hi, Joel. How are you going? Excuse me. I'm out in the chicken yard. If you can hear clucking,
I can hear clucking now. Okay. So, can
I'll
you
stop
see
what I'm doing.
What's
right?
G'day. Sorry.
G'day, Tino. How are you?
Yeah, I've got technical difficulties. Sorry, mate. I think I broke the computer.
I'll do my best over radio. So, this would be one of those trees that you'd love to have on Gardening Australia, where you go, these people are trying to get the biggest crop and the tree's grown too big.
Yep.
And it should be cut and let the air through and all that sort of stuff. Right, now, it's got a crop of plums on it that we want to save for some wine. So,
yes.
The winds in the last couple of weeks have been so tremendous.
Oh.
That literally blew a possum out of a tree and killed it stone dead.
Really?
So, yeah,
wow.
Split the trunk
vertically. Yeah, I can see that.
You have your three... Yeah, right. So it's sort of... Now, Julie, who's listening in the other room, so we're not...
Hi, Julie.
her opinion is the tree's not worth saving after we get the crop off. But I reckon, asking you, if we remove the crop, do the big prune, is there something that you can patch the trunk with? See, because I'm holding it together with, like, as you can see in the photo,
the strap.
People out there in Radio Land, there's a cargo strap holding the crown in.
It's brilliant.
And another strap holding the trunk.
Yeah,
can you bog a trunk?
Well, look, it's not a question I get asked every day, but look, you're both right. You know, in some ways, a person would sort of look at that and just go, yeah, no, take it out and get a new one. I'm a bit stubborn. I like to persist.
It's interesting. Yeah. You say a person would say that, but you wouldn't.
A gardener.
Yeah, so.
A gardener would persist.
Yeah.
He admits he's a gnome all along.
Look, at yeah, wait for the crop to get off. What you've done is fine. You're supporting it for the moment. Yeah. I would even go to the point of just starting to fix the problem now. And with a, obviously the way you're doing it with straps, and you can really, if you can bring those branches back in, even if you need a tether point and get another strap and really sort of bind the whole thing, you can get sealants that you can put in the crack. And that will seal up the wound itself, but you will need to bind it as well. Now, how you bind that, normally with a smaller tree, you just bind it with some grafting tape, and that will hold that to be enough to hold it together. You know, I've seen some people use splints in this situation, where they'll put a splint up the side in the form of like a star dropper, gently sort of dropped in on a few sides of the tree, and then just, you know, literally bound to it like you would a broken leg. Yeah, that's a big split though, and you've still got all the weight on the tree of the fruit.
And I'm actually concerned about, is it dangerous? Is this tree going to split on top of someone?
I can't see how big the top of the tree is, so how much weight it would have on it. Being a plum, it's got some, it's got a bit there.
There's a slightly further away picture, and it's a big tree to have that split in the bottom of it. It's a big tree.
Buttress that. You could get a good sort of wedgy kind of another limb off another tree kind of thing.
And like the sort of builder's prop.
Acroprop. That'd be brilliant. Yep. Oh, bringing building into the garden. I like that.
I've got a prop under the heaviest branch.
So those kind of things will help. And then just if you feel it safe in that respect, then then I'd be binding it up now as I went and try and get it so the thing won't move, but keep it all buttressed, and then take all your fruit off, and then give it a really, really hard prune. Give it a summer prune to take the weight off.
Yeah.
And I'd probably even give it a hard prune during the summer, after the last fruit's been taken off.
Sure.
And see if you can, you might be able to just take that one. It looks like the main branch is, that has completely split, the one you've taken the photo of. Yeah. And you could even probably take that branch out if you know it better. You'll be standing in front of it. If you think you can take that off and then bind the whole thing, then you can bring them back. But bear in mind, it's a monstrous wood and it can go all the way down the stem into the root zone. That's where splits like that can happen. So if you do persist with it, just keep an eye on, fungal infection in that area, and ants' nests. They love getting in there. So clean any debris out as well. So
binding material, perhaps, is this something you get from the hardware, the garden places, like a bandage or something that's heavier than...
grafting tape. I'd be tempted
that Hessian
to
stuff.
Well, yeah, the Hessian wadding, but what I'd do is probably bind it tight with the wadding, and then I'd even use something like Thousand Mile or gaffer tape, and I'd bind that on top. Obviously, don't get it to touch the bark, but I'd do it around the Hessian, and just to keep it all in tight. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
There'll be follow up on this next season.
No. Keep us informed. Actually, if it was my grandfather, he probably would have put some 9-inch nails through it, and that would have held it together. Yeah, plaster, and really bogged it up with some, carbog or something.
Yeah, I've seen concrete used. That's what I thought. I'll just see what you say, but I thought even plaster bandage. I mean, it's a wounded animal, so we'll have to look up.
Pretty. Oh, I love you. I love your attitude, mate. That's brilliant. It's moving.
Good on you, Mal. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Bye. Happy Christmas.
You too. You too, guys.
That's Malcolm from Mole Creek there. If you're ever keen to have a little look, Malcolm and Julie have a fantastic little place at Mole Creek. It's a really sweet place. I visited there, and that's online. You can find Malcolm and Julie's place on Mole Creek online and follow me around their garden and meeting their chickens and stuff. It's a really lovely little piece.
And that's where we're filming up in the north and seeing the amount of gardens. We went to Kaydale and the girls there, the ladies there are fantastic, you know, and really sort of that wonderful country hospitality and you know, just very grounded, wonderful, lovely people.
We're going to get onto the text line now and see who else has texted us with a problem this hour. Mary in Wynyard says, how deep must soil be in a raised bed? Size is 1 cubic metre, growing shallow-rooted salad greens and annuals.
Ah, for that, you'd probably get away with about 20 centimetres. But generally, most vegetable root zones are about 30 centimetres deep. And with annual flowers, if you know, some of the larger larkspurs and stuff, then, yeah, you'd need that 30 centimetres. But if you're only growing violas, you know, 5 centimetres does it. I mean, I think I've grown them on concrete, but, you know, then they're tough. So as long as they've got available water, obviously the deeper the soil, the more foraging, the more roots can get out there, the more foraging the plant can do. So, you know, it'll be able to pick up all the water, whereas if it's in a shallow-rooted sort of...
You've got to water it a lot more regularly.
Just get less grace, yeah.
Chris in Hobart says, how ecologically wasteful is the old-fashioned tradition of having a Christmas tree, as in a real tree Christmas tree?
I wouldn't know. We usually, our Christmas tradition is to buy, like last year, we bought a beautiful Banksia, advanced Banksia marginata, and we have that as our Christmas tree, and then come New Year's or come the time that I take it down because everyone wants to leave it up until like March. We go outside and we plant it and we get an extra advanced tree for Christmas, you know, for our garden. And, you know, we've been filling our gardens up for years like that.
I've actually also heard that there is a Christmas tree farm in the north of the state. I think it was on the country out earlier this week, where they take the trees back off you when you're done with them.
Oh, sweet.
And they're mulched and they're returned to the forest floor and it's kind of a 100% return.
That's great.
I did have another question about the Christmas trees. Someone said keeping them alive for the longest time, does lemonade around that, because you know you've got to put water to the base of a living Christmas tree to keep it green. Someone suggested that lemonade works as well for Christmas trees as it does for cut flowers.
Yeah, carbonation also, but yeah, it could do use as a sealant. But it depends. I mean, it depends on what species of tree you're actually getting. I mean, all the radiata pines that I've harvested as weeds sort of around the place, you know, small ones. I mean, the first time I did that when we moved into Moona, once it died, we mulched, we composted the needles and everything, and the long upright, I think, ended up being a bean pole in the garden. So it depends what you're doing with them, I suppose, is the answer, whether or not they're, you know, they've got an impact or not.
Millie says, jade plants can't see anything living, but white sticky substance predominantly where new tips of growth, but also under some leaves. Told it maybe mealybug. Yeah, what do they look like and how do I get rid of them?
They look like what it sounds like. You describe white and sticky bits. So pyrethrum works well on them. You can use another like neem oil and stuff, but pyrethrum is a very effective one.
The Signet Christmas Market is on tomorrow, Sunday, 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Thank you for that. Liz, who's the who gave me the orchid?
Oh yes,
said she has potting mix and she's going to come and visit and show us how to repot it.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
There you go. So we have advice from the expert. I'll feel much relieved at that. Now, g'day Tino and Joel. Wondering if you know what these bugs are. We have them in our garden on our leaves. We're unable to get rid of them. So little greeny bugs with a kind of a like almost cylindrical with a little brown head and 6 little legs there. What do they look like to you, Tino?
From here, they almost the shape of them almost looks like a ladybug larvae, but it depends on how light. How big, sorry, did it say?
It did not say.
No. If they're a couple of mil, they look bigger than a couple of mil. I'm not too sure. I wouldn't be able to... Look, that can be homework. I'll let you know. But
Send us a picture with your fingers next to them.
Ooh, good. Or a 5-cent piece or
something.
Yeah,
something like that so we can get a bit of scale. That would be helpful. Lovely, thank you. Tino and Joel, Brendan and Maddie from Newtown, we always struggle to grow a healthy basil crop in our raised beds. What's the best approach to grow epic basil?
Epic basil. Okay, they like it warm. Yeah, they wake up warm. So if you've got them small at the moment, what you can do is create a cloche out of an old milk carton with the base turned off, like a little hothouse thing. Glass is better. I do it. I got shown by a guy down at Signet Way how to make one out of a sherry bottle, a 4-litre sherry bottle, with a bit of kerosene and some jute twine and fire, of course, and water. And you can make these glass cloches. But that kind of thing in these kind of seasons, getting a bit of heat around the plant itself as it gets going and before it warms up. Lots of water. They like heat and water, but they like it to drain away, and you shouldn't have a problem with that in the situation you're growing it in a raised bed. Also, when you put your plants in, you'll usually get, if you're rosing from seed, you get them up to about seedling height, what you'd buy them in a punnet, and you'll usually have about, you know, three sets of leaves with a little tiny tip on the top with two outward leaves.
Yep.
Pinch that tip out, and that'll make the plant branch up, and that way you'll get more branches, more leaves, and as the plant later in the season, once you've got your massive quantity of basil that you're eating, it'll start to flower. If you pinch out the flowers as you see them, you can actually continue that plant along. And multiple varieties of basil can be a really good idea too, because there are, you know, the sweet Genovese that is the normal one, but I'm growing a lettuce leaf variety this year because it tastes exactly like the sweet Genovese, but the leaf is like a lettuce leaf. So, you know, it's one leaf per bottle of passata sauce, and they're fantastic. They tend to be, depending on cooler years like this, I've probably done the wrong thing because they tend to be a little bit more susceptible to fungal problems, but I just love them. And also, you know, there's small leaf, the Greek basil, and that tends to be one that I've found goes well into the autumn, almost winter period, depending on what season we get. So multiple, just like anything else, multiple varieties can give you an extended crop. So
for me, my favorite is Thai basil.
Yeah, that's
Thai
lovely.
Basil into a curry, a Thai curry, is just one of the greatest things ever. Now, hi, Tino. Any hints on pruning tomato plants, and what is the best material for tying them to stakes? That's from Dale.
All right, there's a soft, stockingy material. It's called Jolly something. Anyway, so I don't think I'm allowed to say. But there's a soft, stockingy material. It's like a you buy it in a ball. Your cat'll love to play with it if you've got one. But I like them the best as a tie. You can use anything. Yeah, there's weaving methods you can use, but if you're just tying to a stake, soft stocking tie or old stockings.
And do you ever prune a tomato?
Yes. Yeah. Look, if it's a bush type, then no, leave them alone. But if you've got a climbing type, which most people grow, what you need to do sort of now, depending if it's only, say, let's say it's no bigger than 20 to 30 centimetres high. At the moment, I'd just be letting it go. If there's lower leaves, if it's got a lot of lower leaves, I'd probably snap the lowest two off, certainly if they're coming into contact with the ground. But as it grows, you'll find offshoots that are new growing tips, I suppose, and they come out of the junction, the auxiliary, where the leaf comes out of the main stem. In between where the leaf and the main stem are, you'll get a new tip of growth.
Yep, yep.
Now, I usually control them to the three strongest ones, and I'll let the plant get up to about 30 centimetres high, and then I'll start to select the three strongest. There's usually, you know, three on there by that stage with a few more coming on. You snap them off at the leaf junction, and that's usually enough. And then as the plant grows up, as it gets sort of taller and taller, I'll strip lower leaves off. And if it's certainly not a hot season, I will strip them up quite high and allow, one, airflow through under the plant, but two, for the sun, little that we get in cooler summers, onto the fruit to ripen them nicely. So, yeah, that should work. Other people do it all differently, where it's like they'll, you know, they'll promote to one strong leader.
Yep.
Other people will do five, six. So you'll find, if you use that as a basic one, and then over the years you'll find your niche in the way you like to do it, depending on how many stakes or what kind of structure you're tying them to.
Ian has sent us a couple of pictures. Hello, Tino and Joel, from Beau Morris Bees.
Cool.
On an Iceland poppy, a large stick insect on my berry vines. Haven't seen as many bees on one flower before, and it is the first stick insect of that size I've seen in my garden. So the stick insect is huge.
Brilliant.
on the raspberries by the look of it there. That's fantastic.
Yeah, very pretty stick
going on. And look at the bees. Look at the bees.
Wow. Would you call that a conglomeration of bees? What's the verb?
A hive. You're looking for the collective noun.
Or
a swarm.
Oh, my English teacher.
A hive or a swarm of bees, you know. It's a party of bees.
A confederacy of bees. Yeah.
Mika Beauty Point says, when planting corn seed, do you water between them and when shoots appear? And when shoots appear. So,
oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. With corn, keep it wet. It's they're a grass. They love feed and water. So, and heat, you know. So they'll really take off. Obviously, if your soil's a little bit heavy or doesn't drain well, then you've got to moderate that water. But in a well-drained soil and a good friable soil, you can water them quite a bit and they'll turn that into growth.
Bruce says, good morning, Tino. Any ideas what may have happened with the pictured green gauge? It almost looks like autumn. Like the leaves are going yellow, some of them, but a bunch of them are brown and dead as well.
Can you do a close-up on that?
That's as close as I can get on my throat.
Okay. It could be windburn if it's in a, it looks like an open, sunny position.
It does look like the open place.
It could be windburn. I don't think, or it could be even a saltborne. If it's been sprayed with something, then that might be, I can't really make out from here. If you can take a photo of it, like just of one of the really badly affected leaves, that'd be helpful. But, it looks quite dry around it. So maybe give it a drink as well. And it's a new plant. Yeah, I'd say it's windburn, and it's just had been a bit, it's dried out a little bit. So give it a good drink, put a hose on it for a drip, a nice slow drink, and yeah, hopefully you'll lose those leaves, but hopefully you'll get new shoots coming out, and you've still got a bit of green in some of the leaves, so you'll be right.
Jane says, I love a clover lawn, great for bees. I've just put a clover lawn down. Thank you for that, Jane.
Clover in lawn as a lawn, fantastic. I like clover in lawn. I like moss in lawn, though. So you do get dead patches and stuff. And look, I like lawn. As a small amount in a garden, I had my massive veggie patch at my last garden, but we put our perennial border in and we flattened off an area and we put lawn in. And not only was it a great place for my safe place for my kids to play and the flat that we could kick the ball around, also, you know, the few times I'd mow it, I got a really good amount of green for my compost bin, and it was, you know, so there's benefits as well as negatives.
And Kathy says, carols in the ruined church at Port Arthur Historic Site, 8 p.m.
Really? Is that why?
So that must be where it is. It must be
there.
At the ruined church. What a beautiful place to have some carols. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Felicity and Margate, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Marvellous. What's up?
Obviously, you nearly covered everything with that reply to the text about tomatoes. But we had, we have a hothouse, but I get to look after the outside garden. And
oh, brilliant.
Consequently, I inherited these various tomato seedlings of somewhat indefinite heritage. But so there were volunteers from the hothouse from last year.
Yep.
But there were a couple of seedlings we got from a tomato that ripened outside in May last year. I thought, and it was a nice, very smooth-skinned, moderate-sized tomato, and I thought, any tomato that can do that up here, because we're at nearly 400 metres above sea level, any tomato that can do that up, ripen up here in May, I want a piece of the action.
Really?
So we managed to get a couple of those seedlings going. So anyway, 2 weekends ago, I find a spot for these 11 or 12 various tomato seedlings. And, of course, the following Tuesday, it returned to winter. It actually sleeted here briefly. And they, and also the vine crops we planted, were not best pleased. Now, I think the vine crops are okay. They're sort of, they had their first pair of leaves and their subsequent leaves are nice and dark and they've gotten over it.
Yep.
The tomatoes looking a bit like they're having the longest hangover in the history of tomato kind. So I've got a lot of branches that really look like they'd be better off not being there.
Yes.
I think now we're past the risk of frost. Heavens above, it's nearly the middle of December. Is it worth cutting them off to take a bit of weight off the rest of them?
It can be, you know, and those sick or dead, dying-y kind of parts of the plant can be open for infection as well. So sometimes a nice quick snap can prevent that from happening. And a bit of a feed, you know, as I don't normally feed my tomatoes, but when they get to that point where they're, you know, they're lackluster and they've lost that much capacity to generate energy for themselves, then you pushing that along can help a little bit. Yeah, look, it has been a weird season as well, but what you're doing is great. I mean, you're selecting a seed that's basically from observation of what's gone best in your garden. So that's great. That's excellent horticulture there, Felicity.
Well,
that's wonderful.
In fact, yeah, I was listening to the thing about the lady with the broad beans that had sort of suffered, and like we get no shortage of wind up here, but I'm on about we inherited some broad beans from someone, and then I'm on about the fourth generation that have grown here.
Excellent.
And you know, they're thigh high and they just, the wind doesn't touch them.
No, fantastic. No. And with those tomatoes, I reckon you've still got hope. I reckon there's still, you'll give them the love that they need, and they will come through, and you will have tomatoes. I feel positive about that.
We have long, deep, and meaningful conversations.
Excellent. Excellent.
Good on you, Felicity. Thank you.
Greetings. Bye.
Bye. Merry
Christmas. Mind you, Tino, you could have tomatoes with napalm on them and merrily burning away there, and you'd say, I still have hope. They can still get better. I'm sure they'll survive. It's only a small nuclear weapon. Debbie's in Launceston. Hello, Debbie.
Hello, Joel and Tino.
Morning, Deb.
Hi, how are you? Now, you were talking about Christmas trees. I've got a little boy coming around to decorate the Christmas tree next week. I have two beds of lettuces.
Yep.
Which I let go to seed so he can decorate them.
Oh, brilliant.
The Greek lettuce. So they'll be all baubles and everything like that. But this year I've got summer and snow in the middle of it.
Yes.
And lobelia all in the middle of coming out as the lettuces.
Oh, nice. Is it white lobelia you've done?
No, it's the blue.
Blue. Oh, I love that combination, just alone, without the lovely story behind it. But, wow. Oh, great.
Well, it's about 600 lettuces.
600?
Yeah.
Well,
they all come up everywhere in my garden.
So I love the idea of volunteer plants and just that mass planting of things just coming up here, there and everywhere, and you get those species of plants that come up regularly. Oh, no. Great.
Now, I've got a suggestion about that split, I saw years ago this Italian guy.
Yeah.
had a large split.
Yeah.
And he decided to take some cuttings off the tree as well, but he got some mud and put saliva on it.
Yes.
And put it in the split and then put peat moss around it, then plastic.
Yeah, yeah. Look,
glad wrap.
That's the saliva is an antibacterial as well as an antifungal. The mud, if it's a clay, can, you know, set hard like a cement. The peat moss will keep it all moist, stop it from drying out too much, and then the plastic over the top. Yeah.
But then he put some cuttings in there as well too. Yeah. What do you call it? Yeah. As well. So
he grafted it.
Use it as a grafting point.
Ah.
Wow.
And
that's really clever.
It's a grafting plant because it's split.
Yes. Yep. No, that is a great suggestion. I'm sorry, I've just got lemon tart coming in and now something else that looks exceptionally yummy. That's a great suggestion. And actually, the wedge graft in there, but the gentleman will need to wait until next spring probably to do that. But that is a fantastic idea.
And then just prop it up with some bales of hay.
Any support in underneath to stop that from moving.
Oh, yeah, look, this is a big tree.
Yeah.
This must be 4 metres tall, 5 metres tall. I reckon you need serious, a bale of hay ain't going to cut it.
I saw this Italian fellow do it. He had a split right down the middle.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. No.
And they do some fantastic things, Italians.
I know. My dad used to, still does, you know, you go out to the olives, and after he's pruned them, he'll have like four-by-twos and broomsticks, and they'll be like strapped to the branches, like physically forcing the tree outwards, you know, with, you know, with things hanging off the tree to pull branches in different directions. So, and that manipulation of trees is great, you know, because trees will respond to it. And and you start to bend those branches and you can actually make the, you get a good framework of your tree. You can make a really good, strong structure on it. So,
yeah. Well, I lived in Seddon in Melbourne.
Seddon, yeah.
And we had a third of an acre in Seddon, our property. My father did. And some of the things I've kept going, but he never listened to anyone. He just did what he wanted to do and it would grow.
I think that's gardening is an expression of your own personality.
That's
and I
right.
love that.
That's why everything in mine is dead.
No, no.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Jimmy. Bye.
Bye.
You're not a bad gardener.
Let's try John from Grindelwald. Hello, John.
Oh, hello, Tina.
G'day.
I've got a problem with a green gauge plum.
Yep.
In that the new growth coming on it, all the leaves are quite green, but they're crinkled, and as if there's some sort of bug in there, but there's not. And it's only on the new growth, the old growth leaves look all right.
Crinkled, as in they're folded in, or...?
Yeah, sort of... they're quite wrinkled, but not rolled up on themselves like there's a bug in there. They're just distorted.
Right. It could be... Look, cold and wind can do that, new growth. It can deform the tree if that's the... Or the new tips, I should say.
Yes.
It can be something like a thrip insect. So they're tiny. The thing is to get a white plate and then... hold it over those deformed tips or leaves and tap the tips and see if anything comes out in the wash. And they'll be little rice-shaped, like black rice, pretty much. And then you'll know you've got thrip. That can be controlled with pyrethrum or neem. So it might be either of those two things.
Okay.
Yes, if it is just the environmental factor and if it is just, say, a cold bit's come through as that tip's grown out, it's been a cold morning, and it's distorted or mutated the growth, then it'll right itself. But if it is the thrips, then, yeah, you'll need to control them because it'll continue to happen.
Okay. We have had cold winds.
Might be that. Yeah, cold wind can do it too. Okay. So, I mean, plums are pretty good, but, you know, they are, these frosty conditions, can affect all growth.
Yeah, the fruit looks all right. It's coming on it. So.
Nice. Yeah. Well, you know. that's a very good thing.
All right, then.
Green gauges.
Cheers, John. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Mate. Bye, John.
Mary's in Prospect. Hello, Mary.
Oh, hello, Joel and Tino.
Good morning.
I have a Pied de Ronsard climbing rose.
Yes.
And it's tied to a high cast iron pillar.
Yes.
But the limbs are getting really long, and the ones that aren't actually tied, the weight of the flowers is, you know, bending the limbs right down, and I'm wondering how to prune all that back and when I should do it, how much I should chop off.
Well, if it's
in flower at the moment, and then it's going to have another flowering.
Yeah, it's going to have a second flush come through. Mm. Look, obviously it's a decision to be made between whether you think the branch will snap or the likelihood of the branch will snap. I would be going through and probably harvesting the flowers to... you know, for inside or potpourri or whatever you can use them for, and lightening. You don't have to take all the flowers in bloom off, but certainly thinning them out. Any new bits of growth, you can sort of take the weight off with them, or alternatively, you can try and bind the branch, the heaviest, weightiest bits, if applicable, bind them and support them, you know, up to the structure if you can do that. So... there's no other real way except for, next season, I should say, you can try pinching tips out, and that can, make the growth a little bit stockier and thicker. So, and not as long. So that's really something for maybe next season. But yeah, I'd say
in the winter, can I, cut the lengths of the limbs back a third or something?
Yeah, you could do, but the Pied de Ronsard, you know, you want it to get up and cover stuff. You can cutting them back down will shore up or thicken up those trunks, and then you know, hopefully you'll get a nice rigid trunk to support that weight next time. But again, you know, that can almost mean that they flower even more, and then, you know, so the structure needs to be enough for those to, or strong enough for those to be bound to. Yeah. So, but, and a soft tie as well is always a nice thing to do with a bit of movement in it, if that's possible. But for the moment, I would be, harvesting, going through thinning the flowers and harvesting them, taking them inside and enjoying them. And then sort of eventually as they die off, just be really on top of deadheading, just to, and taking sort of any bits of growth weight you can and binding it back.
Best of luck with that, Mary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers,
thank
Mary.
You. Mary in Prospect. Enjoy. There's one more person waiting online. That's Janet. Janet, hang on. Tino will come out and talk to you during the news. Thank you, Tino.
Thank you. I've been so distracted by all this yummy food that's surrounded me now, literally surrounding me.
It's kind of crazy.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to.
Someone has sent in a lovely picture. They're growing their basil in a Tonka truck. How good does that look?
Two of my favourite things in the world.
That's pretty good, the Tonka truck. And there's a picture of the little bug next to a 10-cent piece. They're tiny, teeny little bugs, the ones that we were wondering what they were.
They could be baby ladybugs. They're just tiny.
Well,
they could be like a thrip, though. So leave it with me. I'll get a photo idea on that. Homework for next week. Yeah, yeah.